Our staff, the researchers, committee secretaries, welcome to all of you. I hope you had a good weekend. Are there any apologies that we should note? Mr. Kwankwa, you there? Or Sheikh Imam will join later. So I don't want to. Okay. Nobody wants to leave early. Everything's short anyway. Let's quickly dispense with minutes of the last meeting. You all have copies? Okay. Page 1.
Thank you. Can I just ask that we now remove Ms. Kate Cook? She's marked as absent. She's no longer part of the committee, so she shouldn't really be marked as absent because she shouldn't be here in the first place. I notice her name is also still on the attendance register. If we could rectify that, please.
Yeah, I think we were informed the last time we were in this meeting that I think maybe the committee secretaries were waiting for something. What we do? Who must put it there? The DA must put it where?
In
the ATC. Okay, but we will make a note here in the meantime that she's no longer a member of this committee and we will not include her again. Page 2. Nothing. Page 3. Page 4. Remove for adoption. Honorable Shoppe, to remove. You want to take yourself?
Yes. Thank you, Chair. Remove for adoption.
Who seconds? Honorable Shoppe.
Yeah,
before that.
Yeah, before.
Press your mic. The wrong method.
Such a while, not yet. Yeah, sorry, the numbering after 4, the closing remark should be 5 and so forth.
You get it, son. Who wants to move for adoption? Honorable Madropa.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I move to support Honorable Tole with the amendments that just made by Honorable Vic to accept the minutes as a true reflection of the previous declaration.
Agreed. Thank you very much. So the corrections will be made. Minutes have been duly adopted. I would now like to welcome National Treasury, who will be presenting to us the first quarter report for 2014-15 financial year. Maybe let's allow National Treasury to say who's here so we know the whole team and they'll indicate who's going to present. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Honourable Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. This is an extremely busy time for my team members. All of them are very engaged in bilateral and multilateral discussions with departments over their budgets. So unfortunately, I'm not joined by anyone else from the Public Finance team. It's just myself, Matthew Sims, the Deputy Director General for Public Finance. And I'm supported by a ghost, Makili Blackie, from our parliamentary office.
Okay, you may proceed.
Thank you very much, Dave. This is the first time I've made this presentation to not just to this committee, but at all. So for all of us, I think this is a bit of a process of learning what it is that we want to communicate and how, and I certainly would appreciate any suggestions as to how we can improve this engagement going forward. The invite requested that we come and brief you on the first quarter expenditure outcomes for the 2014 financial year. We thought, just as an outline of the presentation, we thought we would start, since we have a brief parliament, on the outcomes for 13-14 with just a few headline observations. We would then give some detail in terms of the overall numbers. And there is an opportunity to discuss some of the details in terms of the departments themselves. I haven't included those slides in this presentation, but I can make them available to the committee. Instead, what I've done is I've just identified a few key things that stand out to me that I would like to raise with the committee. There's an opportunity to discuss a little bit further. We certainly can. I'm not sure how much I know about the details of many of these things, but I will do my best to answer where I can. But obviously, it's the accounting offices of the particular departments that are important. My concern was that if we go through each department, it's going to take a long time, and it's not, in my view, a lot of benefit in spending that amount of time on those issues. By way of an introduction, let me just say that, you know, the information that we have within Treasury on a short-term basis is very much financial information. It's about the actual transactions of government departments. It often is a good proxy for service delivery information, but sometimes it is not. So I'm going to present essentially financial information to you rather than service delivery information. I would also say that the first quarter data is often not a good indicator of the financial trends for departments for the year. A number of important programs can have quite a lumpy payment profile. And we do find in the first quarter, if you just look at expenditure relative to expectations, there can be substantial lags which are made up for later during the course of the year. So this does just need to be kept in mind. More generally, I think that this is going to be an interesting year for us. The late passing of the appropriation bill may have influenced how some of some departments have contracted during the first quarter. But I think more generally, our experience with the NMOS process, the macro organization of the state in the past, that is where we introduce or consolidate departments, can interfere quite substantially when new departments may not have the capacity to spend off the bat, and there might be some uncertainty over mandate and responsibility. So that is something that this committee could keep its eye out for. So moving into the preliminary expenditure outcomes for 2013-2014, essentially we passed an adjustment budget at the time of the NCBPS, so just over R1 billion. 1.053.4 billion rand. Preliminary outcomes were in the region of 1.047 billion rand, indicating underspending of 6.5 billion rand. That is obviously 6.5 billion rand that could have been spent on service delivery. It may not have been because of savings, and there are one or two instances where that's the case, but it also is sometimes the case that departments failed to implement the program at the scale that they had originally indicated in their budget documentation. But also something to keep in mind is 6.5 billion rand out of just over 1 trillion rand is proportionally a very small amount of money, but I don't want to appear trite because, of course, 6.5 billion rand is a considerable amount of service delivery if it can be spent effectively and properly. There was a small amount of overspending, mainly in two departments, the international...
One small correction of mine, it would confuse us. The second bullet, 1.047 billion, and then 6.4 billion unspent. Unspent.
Yes.
Is that a trillion?
That is a trillion.
Yes.
1,047 trillion rand. 1.047 billion. Sorry, did I say billion? My apologies for that. That would have been.
Record is a trillion, therefore, so that it makes sense.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. As the head of public finance, I should be able to distinguish between my billions and trillions. Thank you for the correction. So overspending within DIRCO, the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, of 117 million rand. Most of that, I would say all of it, was due to unanticipated depreciation in the exchange rate. Where they have contracts in foreign currency, it's a difficult thing to budget for because the exchange rate changes on a daily basis, but we only get two chances during the year to make an appropriation for them. There's a larger amount within the Department of Transport around the implementation of the EMITIS, or the Electronic National Administration of Traffic Information System. This is an awkward situation where our expectation is that this will be paid for by revenue generated through an agency of the Department of Transport. And for last year, the agency withheld the funds. We are in engagement with the Department of Transport at a ministerial level on this issue in order to resolve it.
Sorry, Chair. Okay. Can we have the name of the agency?
Chair, it will come back to me. If I don't remember it, I will let you know to find out for you. Okay. But if your secretary can remind me at the end of the meeting.
Did you sort that out? The RTMC, Road Traffic Management Corporation. Yeah. Underspending. Highest levels of underspending were recorded in COTA, 2.1 billion rand. This is an unfortunate situation which tends to happen every year. What happens is where municipalities underspend on the conditional grants that we've given them, and they don't return those funds to us, we withhold an equivalent amount on their equitable share. So in essence, it means that if the transfer in a given year is of a similar amount and that they are not enabled to accumulate surpluses for utilization at their own discretion. The Department of Social Development, this we consider as something of a saving. The re-registration process through SASSA, the South African Social Security Agency, cleaned out the system fairly effectively. Initiatives to combat fraud and corruption managed to save the fiscus 1.5 billion rand. Within health, there were delays on the implementation of the Health Facility Revitalization Capital Program, as well as the National Health Insurance Pilot Project, amounting to 703 billion rand. Basic in education, similar problems in terms of capital grant spending, delays in the implementation of the school infrastructure backlog grants, and within human settlements, withholding of funds from the Social Housing Regulatory Agency following investigations and fraudulent transactions of almost just over half a billion rand, 552 million. Those are the main headlines in terms of the outcomes for 13-14. Moving on to the first quarter of the current financial year,
2014-15. Okay. Can we just speak closely before we go to the next one? On the 702, you say it's a national health insurance and another project. Can we have a breakdown of how much for national health insurance and how much for the other project? That's on that one. And on the municipalities, can we have a schedule to show which municipalities were affected? Thank you.
Chair, if Ghost could SMS the Chief Director of Health, Dondo Mahwejani, and ask him to provide that breakdown between the NHI pilot project and the capital grant, we can give that to you today. The municipal equitable share, that breakdown, we will have to revert to you at a later stage. So, headline numbers for the first quarter, 2014-15. The graph gives by month the revenue and expenditure, the cumulative revenue and expenditure and deficit for those periods. The main budget revenue for quarter one was 218.6 billion rand. It was a little bit less than what we had expected, but nothing too concerning. It is the fact that the main intake of corporate income tax in particular takes place in the July month, so you will see in quarter two a little bit more information about what the likely revenue trends are for government. Certainly the information that we have available to us indicates that there is something that we are planning on a shortfall. It shouldn't be a very large shortfall, but we are concerned about risks to the fiscal framework from the revenue side. In terms of total spending, 253.3 billion rand, and that implied a deficit of around 35 billion rand, which was broadly in line with expectations. Looking at the composition of the spending, 45% of total spending was direct charges against the National Revenue Fund. That's an equivalent of 115 billion rand. The direct charges in the graph and the top there are basically the 36% for the provincial equitable share, the 8% for state debt costs, and the black part there, 1%. For other direct charges. The equitable share transfers to provinces is just over 90 billion rand and is transferred in terms of the Division of Revenue Act. The large share of state debt costs, the percentage of what we spend money on, is a concern. That is obviously an outcome of the deficits that you've run in the past. And the debt is a debt stock that you've accumulated on which you need to pay interest. The reason it's a direct charge is because there's essentially no discretion on it. You either pay it or you don't pay it. The voted expenditure making up 55% indicated in the grade is discussed a little bit further on. So just a bit more on the direct charges. You can see how the state debt costs have increased during the first quarter over the last 3 years. Again, that is related to the amount of debt stock that we bought up since 2008-2009. And we would expect that to continue for a year or two, unfortunately. Looking at the voted expenditure, so that's 55% of total spending, so looking at that in some more detail. Let me see if I can get a pointer to work here. What we have here, this very large 71%, that is the transfers and subsidies that government pays, and there is a slide on that a little bit later, but mainly that's transfers to households and government agencies. Then the 29% that remains, that white block, that white slice of the pie, that is what is explained in further detail in this bar here. The 21% of that remaining expenditure is goes towards compensation of employees. A very large part of what we procure is labor. Then 7% going to goods and services, and then relatively small amounts going basically to rent on land and payments for financial assets. Looking at the bullets on the right-hand side there, this pie chart represents 140 billion rand, 71% transfer to households and other spheres of government, or 29% or 41 billion rand spent directly by departments on operations, mostly for compensation of employees. Now, drilling down a little bit further into that 21% and looking at the operations expenditure, this is just another way of representing that bar chart that we had on the previous slide, but it also shows you the trends between 2013, being the gray bar, and 2014-15. This number is in rand billion, and that's nominal rand, not adjusted for the impact of inflation. Operational expenditure increased by 1.7 billion rand, 4.4%. 29.5 billion rand was spent on compensation of employees, and 10.2, roughly a third, being spent of that compared to compensation of employees being spent on goods and services. So you can see that quite clearly in the graph. You can also see that there was growth between in compensation of employees between 2013 and 2014. That growth was around 6.5%, broadly in line with our expectation, maybe a little bit faster than we would like, but that again is something that is dictated by wage agreements and employment numbers. While there was a small decrease of 1.1% in goods and services, that decline in goods and services is at least partially a result of the cost containment measures that Minister Gordon announced in budget this year. This is just a continuation of the previous slide, so that graph is unchanged. Looking at capital assets, increase in capital expenditure of about 4%. But you can also see that capital is a relatively small part of national government expenditure. The majority of government capital spending takes place firstly at the local level and then at the provincial level, with only a small portion of that taking place at the national level. And that's got to do with the fact that the capital intensive programs of government, being health and education, are principally at the provincial level. Then the urban development initiatives are at the local level. At the national level, most of the capital spending is in police, justice, and water affairs. Within police, the criminal justice sector, within the broader security cluster, the criminal justice sector revamp program and the upgrading police stations are large programs of national government and regional public infrastructure projects within the Department of Water Affairs is also a large item of spending. Looking at the administration expenditure of government, the national government, 20% of operational expenditure is on administration. Most of that is within the police and correctional services and defense departments. Certainly we engage with those departments on the size of that administration spending. One would like to have as lean as possible an administration component, but it is important to keep in mind that police, correctional services and defense have a complicated service delivery environment, including the management of stock levels and quite complex procurement issues, and that partially explains why they have such large administration components. Administration as percentage of a budget as a whole is an interesting indicator to look at. It's perhaps more useful than just looking at the size of those of administration votes. And in terms of who spends the most on administration compared to the rest of their budget, the presidency, the departments of women, children, and people with disabilities, I suppose that name needs to change now, public enterprises, economic development, sport and recreation, South Africa, and communication and tourism, tend to be the departments that spend the most on administration relative to the rest of their budgets. The next component we look at is transfers. So government makes substantial transfers to other agencies in the public sector, but also the country as a whole. The largest item within that is the transfers to households. But let me actually run through this the way that it's been represented in the presentation, excuse me. So 20.8 billion transferred to provinces and municipalities, representing an increase of 12%. That's the first bar there, an increase between 2013-14 and 2014-15. For provinces, this doesn't include the equitable share, it's just the conditional grants, whereas municipalities, I think it does include the equitable share. the local government equitable share transfers under the Department of Operative Government and Traditional Affairs. Then there are potential transfers, health grants to provinces, including the HIV and AIDS grant and the National Tertiary Services grant, as well as the Human Settlements grant. So those are the main items within that component of the first quarter. Moving on, 12.3 billion rand was transferred to higher education institutions, representing an increase of 12%. The majority of these grants are block grants to universities. So universities tend to get about 40% of their revenue from government in the form of block grants. It's just the sum of money which is distributed to the universities depending on the size of the university. 11.2 billion rand were transferred to public corporations and private enterprises. Most of those would be agencies of government like SANRAL or PRASA. And significant recipients, there you go, include Passenger Rail Agency of South Africa for the prepayment of rolling stock. So that explains some of the increase in the size of the public entities transfers reflected there. Some concluding remarks in terms of the overview. Understanding of 6.4 billion rand in the 2013-14 year, mainly driven by understanding in the capital program of the Departments of Health and Education, understanding in local government grants and a cleanup of the Social Security database. In terms of the first quarter of the year, spending on most lines was, most items was in line with our projections and expectations. There was a decrease of 1.1% in nominal terms on spending in goods and services. So that would be a decrease of about 6.5%, maybe 7% in real terms. It's a substantial decline. And we'd like to think that that was mainly in response to cost containment measures published by the Treasury in the 2014 budget. Thank you. Chair, I can pause there, or I can carry on and just give some reflections in terms of the specific the actual departments.
Okay, let's check with members whether they want to engage at this stage.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the allocation, I hear 40% of universities of the monies of the universities come from the state. I would like to know if in allocating this fund, Treasury does check whether these institutions that receive state funding have started to mirror their strategic plan to the National Development Plan. What I mean by that is that we always cry foul that we have got a shortage of skills in South Africa. And I've always been worried that are these universities considering themselves as part of this country? Are they aligning their courses towards the demands of the market, the demands of the requirements of the state of the Republic of South Africa? Because I would consider that when Treasury allocates this fund, they would really demand value for the money that we give. 40% is a very big amount.
Let me just check something with your concluding marks. You'd say the previous year would have ended with about 6 billion rand underspent. You indicate where the social shall the movement be savings by SASSA, but the other one would be local government grants. So obviously that would be a concern to us, because I suppose transfer to local government, most of them would be infrastructure related programs. So let's have that, but that would be a concern. And your concluding remarks, if I'm correct, you are basically saying, as we started this year, all is well. We shouldn't worry. Would I be correct?
Thank you, Honorable Shoppe Sitoli. The issue you raised is a very important issue, and there are a number of challenges in how we prepare young people to access the formal economic opportunities through the higher education and further education and training sectors. The National Treasury gives the Department of Higher Education an allocation, and it's their responsibility to ensure that the distribution of the allocation meets the mandate that they've set themselves. We engage very deeply with them on the processes that they follow. Certainly, I think that, you know, this is a block grant, doesn't differentiate between universities in terms of financial need. It just differentiates in terms of the size of the university, and we have had engagements with civil society as well as the Department of Higher Education on introducing a more equitable formula that will reflect the financial needs of various universities. But as the issue you raise is slightly different, it's around the extent to which universities have transformed their curricula and their training to be in line with the needs of the country. That is something that the Department of Higher Education needs to take responsibility for. We had an excellent budget engagement with them about 3 or 4 days. That was on Monday, in fact. This was yesterday, in fact. Passing a little quickly at the moment. And many of these issues were very openly and honestly engaged with. And I think that that is very encouraging to me. In fact, as part of those budget engagements, we included civil society to talk about access, but also success of students within the higher education system. We find there is a huge volume of students coming into tertiary education, but only a small pipe of students actually coming out the other end. And we need to, you know, it's a great thing that we've got so many people coming into that system, but we need to expand the numbers of graduates. So we are having engagements with the department around this, and I think that discussing modalities of delivery is something the department is increasingly open towards, and certainly the part of that discussion is about the relevance of the service that they are providing to young people. But I think if you want more detail, if you would like to discuss what the department is actually doing to ensure to address the problem you've identified, you will have to refer to the Department of Higher Education. Chair, I think that you're absolutely correct in asking the question, and I know why you're asking it, because of course things are not well. I think at an overall macro level, there are not indications of significant under or overspending to us at this stage. But at vote level, there are a couple of areas which are of concern. The two very disappointing areas from 13-14, the health and education, basic education expenditures. Those areas in the first quarter of this year have continued to underperform quite substantially. So it is the school infrastructure grant. Let me actually try and find a better name for that. Excuse me. Within health, it's the base in the National Health Insurance Pilot Project, and health City Revitalization Capital Program, and within basic education, it is problems in implementing the school infrastructure backlogs grant. These are two very important programs that we've already cut significant amounts out of. So if you remember in the strat planning, I made the point that, you know, yes, the budget gives us the opportunity to engage in tough discussions with departments, but ultimately it's the departments that have to deliver these services. And all we can really do is to give money and take it away. And where departments have illustrated that they are not in a position to spend money as they intend, we take money away. And this has been the Health Facility Revitalization Capital Program and Schools Infrastructure Backlogs Grants have been two of the enforcement areas that we cut, and the indications this year are still not that they have in place the required capacity to make those expenditures. So that is two of the areas that stand out. The other area that stands out to me is vacancies. Funded vacancies within certain departments keep coming up as a recurrent reason for underfunding.
Sorry, if you said education, healthy, okay, fine. Those, what about human settlements? What's the indication for this quarter? You had human settlement there about 552.5 million.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
That you're not worried about that?
No, we're not at this stage. The problem with human settlements at this stage that has come up is around vacancies. It's one of the departments that has a fairly high vacancy level. The information I have is that they only have an occupancy rate about 65% of their funded establishment.
And then local government?
The COGTA issue.
The indication for the first quarter.
The indication is that problem that you identified with money being withheld because of underspending in congressional grants will continue this year. So there is already money being withheld because of their failure to spend money and then not return it to the fiscus. The issue of local government capacity to absorb...
Before that, you wanted committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. That was one of the concerns I had. Because I don't know whether they're going to deal with this one or proceed, but the underspending, and again, the money is without, but the programs are suffering. Again, what happens again in the coming year is that's going to continue to happen, and, you know, I've previously indicated that it's unacceptable. Instead of using a short or quick solution by withholding money, is to rather get somebody in there that can spend the money for the purpose that it is intended. So that is a serious concern from that I would like to raise.
I guess we would have to flag that out, this issue, because I think I'm going to have to come back to it, probably with the relevant departments. I guess Treasury can do very little about it. I think what we try to get from Treasury is exactly what you're saying, so we know. Because if we ended up 2.1 billion being withheld last year, we need to get an indication what's happening this year. And if the question is that trend is continuing, then it means there's a big worry. Of course, I know that the first quarter is always difficult to determine whether there will be an improvement, but at least there is an indication. Particularly, what Treasury need to help us with is your projections in terms of maybe what I may call the lowest expenditure. Because lowest expenditure in the first quarter might tell you a story of what will happen that day. Maybe not a complete story, because other people, when you come to second and third quarter, they improve. But I think it's good for us to know, because then we can watch that trend. Yeah. Honorable Madam.
Yeah, correct. Our concern is around the level of spending on the infrastructure. But one of the views that we were told that there is an indirect grant to prevent the understanding. Other thing, as my colleague is indicating, that rather than withholding the funds, we can get diplomats to implement that particular fund program. Yes. But now, what is the role now of this indirect grant, and why do we continue? Because the indirect grant was aimed at trying to fast track the FNDC and the program.
Thank you, Chair. I have a number of comments throughout the presentation. Should I just limit them to this slide for now? Can I carry on? Thank you. Mr. Simmons, it might be beyond the province of your department as such, but when I look at the $2.1 billion underspent in COFTA, I don't know whether Treasury looks at the reasons for this. And I suspect that part of the problem is the fact that the budgetary cycle doesn't coincide with your procurement cycle. So you're going to end up at the end of your budget cycle with all of the procurement programs in process, but that haven't yet been fully paid for because the two don't coincide with each other. And therefore, when you then withdraw the funds, you're going to put a stop to that procurement cycle because now it won't be completed because there are no funds for doing it. The funds were there when it was initiated, but when it comes to implementation, the funds have been withdrawn because they haven't been spent yet. And I just think that we need to surely find a way to bridge that gap so that we don't take away funds at the time that become due for payment. It seems to be that very often that happens because of the long process of procurement. Then regarding human settlement, I'm concerned about the fact here which is that it was due to investigations into fraudulent transactions, because in real terms the effect is that we punish public because we found fraud happening in the department. And I feel we need to try and find a way to bridge that gap as well, because we can't sort of tie the one to the other. It's the people who need service who are being disadvantaged by the fact that there's fraud going on after the money. Not because the money's not there, but because of the fraud, and we say right now we're withholding money. And I feel we need to somehow get past that problem. If I can continue with a few other just questions I have on slide 7. This is the one here, the income revenue versus expenditure. The fact that there are blue blocks on the slide, I imagine, I just want your confirmation, is that effectively increasing state debt? Is that the net result of that slide, that we are just accumulating state debt as we go? On slide 8, it starts at the top, mentioned 45% of total expenditures were direct charges against the National Revenue Fund. I don't see that 45% indicated in the pie graph, and I wondered where does it fall, or what is the relationship between that 45% and the pie graph we've been shown with the 55, the 36, and so on. I wasn't quite sure how the two tied up. If you could just give an explanation of that for us. Slide 9, this is the one of servicing the national debt. My question was very simply, is this merely servicing costs, or is it also reducing the debt? Are we just paying interest, or are we actually reducing the debt? And if we're reducing the debt, what is the breakdown between interest and reduction of capital? And then I had a question in slide 13. This is the administration for police, correctional services, defense. I just wondered, it might, as I say, be outside of your particular frame of reference, but is there any portion here that relates to maintenance? Obviously, in any department like the police, professional services and effects, there's huge maintenance costs involved because it's all capital equipment, or largely capital equipment that is being spent when it comes to the funding model. And I wonder how much is spent on maintenance, on maintaining the assets we buy. Yeah, I think that's it for now. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, another question. Yeah, thanks, Chair. I just wanted to have clarity on
the social development 1.4 billion understanding. Does it suggest that the process of research registration is incomplete and therefore there's underspend on that scope? Or is it a saving from the weeding out of those who have been corrupting the system? If we could get that clarity. On education, higher education in particular, I think there are two issues here. You've made mention of the big pipe at the beginning and the thinning pipe at the end. But the second part of it is the skills output, both from universities and community colleges. And I think that higher education is a case to answer. Maybe there is a need for a sitting between National Treasury, ZSA, and probably ourselves, Chairperson, to understand why it has been happening that ZSA comes out with a refreshed statistics which suggest that we have been de-skilling our people over the past 20 years. But yet there has been this big pile of students getting in. Even those that are successfully getting out are students for the economy. The point Honorable Shoppers Toy raised earlier on. So there are two issues here where higher education has got to answer. So in your conversation with higher education, I think these are issues that need to come up quite clearly. Because universities can't just be given such huge grants and they are not accountable for what the output is. So those are two issues I wanted to highlight, Chairman. Otherwise, we talk of growing the economy, but we are not assisting that with the skills development.
Okay, let's allow you want to come in, and then we'll allow you to respond, and then we'll take other further comments.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Yeah, there is some issues that I'd like to raise from the presentation. The first one is on slide number four, that's regarding the depreciation. Just a question, is there no forward cover that could be taken to make provision for this depreciation in currency? So as to avoid that loss. That's one. And then about the transport, that 632 million, is that a one-off? Are we likely to expect that recording of incidents again, INSS again this year? So that's just a one-off. Then that on slide number 8, that deals with that 45%. I just want clarification on that. Is that 45%, that exact 45%, is that the amount that's permissible in terms of an amount that could be spent before the budget is approved, or is that just a coincidence that is 45%? Because somehow I recall seeing that 45%. Slide number 15, sorry, I don't have the mistake. Slide number 15, that's the allocation to the higher education institutions. Question, and obviously it might help the higher education institutions, and that's the reason for the question, is that the amount of transfers to these institutions, are they done equally, or is it done mainly upfront, the amount? Because obviously, depending on how the allocation is, or the distribution rather is made, that will probably disadvantage them. So just a question on that. And then just the last one on the slide, just a comment on that. Just again for information, the 1.1% saving, are we likely to see that continuing, that on business services? Because if it does, it's obviously good for the budget. So just a question on that. Thanks so much.
Okay, I'll do
is it the nature of those departments that they have to care more in the administration, or there is something wrong in particular public enterprises and economic development, sport and recreation, communication and policy might be the first one. But is it the nature of these departments that they are supposed to spend the largest proportion of their budget, or there is something wrong?
Let's allow Messi to respond, and Amphel Ghost is also the GP. Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair. I will do my best to respond. If I've misunderstood the questions or leave anything out, please feel free to remind me that I'm dodging. The issue of the local government grant, Chair, I think you correctly identified that it requires a much deeper discussion, and that there are stakeholders involved that have a greater deal of responsibility and accountability in terms of this. The National Treasury does have an intergovernmental financial relations unit at the Strathclyde unit. Wendy, she's a chief director in that unit, and their DG there is Mai Jing. Some of you might be familiar with her, and they're very passionate about this issue. They have a lot to say and generally very good ideas about this issue. And so if you do have discussion with COGTA and one or two of the other departments about local government conditional grants, I think it would be a good idea if Treasury was included in that discussion. The problem of withholding the funds, though, is I'm not sure to what extent Honourable McLaughlin, I'm not sure to what extent they take account of the issues that you raise, but I'm sure that there is an opportunity for that to be addressed. My understanding is that this is in response to unspent funds, money that has been that hasn't been committed to a particular procurement. So it relates specifically to the capacity of the municipalities to absorb those funds. Responding to that is very difficult. We have introduced a number of capacity support initiatives. I think off the top of my head, we're spending around in excess of 4.5 billion rand a year in providing capacity to municipalities to support them in terms of that. And that's an important issue. That's 4.5 billion rand, I think might even close to 6 billion rand, that is being spent on support and not on delivery, and delivery itself doesn't seem to be that much better. The other response we've made is to introduce indirect grants, mainly in the provincial sphere. We haven't done this within the local government sphere. I'm not sure if the law allows us to. But no, that's not true. There are a number of indirect grants already within the local government sphere. We need to be careful, though, because, you see, it's an economic lecturer once told me, it's a competition for a beautiful thin pig. The first pig comes out and it's fat, and being a pig, it's not terribly pretty. And you say, well, we hate that pig, let's give the prize to the second pig. But the thing is that the second pig is also fat and not very pretty. So you can make a mistake here by thinking that national government, just because local government doesn't have the capacity to implement these programs, doesn't mean that national government necessarily has that capacity. And this is especially relevant in the underspending within health and basic education. Both of those are provincial functions which didn't perform particularly well within the provinces. And there was a decision made to take funds away from the provinces and create an indirect grant. And the lesson is that the national department is even less able to spend those funds. So where we do create indirect grants, we need to make sure we do so in response to the correct problem, but more importantly, that the national department is in a better place to make those, to undertake those expenditures. The human settlement issue, I'm just trying to recall This was in response to the investigation. Again, on the part of as I said, it's the responsibility of the Human Settlements Department to put in place the correct instruments for procuring the goods and services that they require in terms of their mandate. If it arises that they don't have those instruments in place, all we can do is withhold the funds. Of course, we engage with them, we do everything we can to support them in terms of getting correcting that situation. But as you can see, there are just, you know, instances of fraudulent transactions is a serious matter and can take a while to work out. Perhaps the portfolio committee that deals with human settlements may have a view and may be able to support you in terms of understanding what that they are doing with the department to address this issue. The issue of the deficit here, you've got it in one. That's exactly what it is. It's an increase to the borrowing. It's a difference between our income and our expenditure, and in order to meet those expenditure commitments, we need to borrow money in order to finance those commitments. They incur interest costs, they add to our debt stock. The 0.5% in slide 8, I apologize if this wasn't clear when I presented. It is the direct charges for the provincial equitable share, the 36%, plus the direct charges for the state debt costs, and then other direct charges of 1%. And there might be some rounding things. I think that does add up to 45%. The other direct charges are raw salaries, the minister's salaries, judges' salaries, president's salaries, mainly. There might be one or two others. There was another question on the direct charges, let me see if I can just identify it quickly, whether it's a 45% level, whether it's some kind of target that we have either above or below. No, the direct charges are, they arise, it's purely a coincidence that they're at 45%. Yeah. But essentially they are things over which we've got very limited discretion. So you don't want, the constitution entitles provinces to their equitable share. You don't want national parliament to be voting on the appropriation of it. You approve the Division of Revenue Act, but you don't approve appropriation of it, and that is how the constitution understands the system. At the same time, you don't want parliamentary members voting on their own salaries. Which is why you don't, you might want to, which is why they are a direct charge. Same thing with interest costs. You enter a contract to spend that money, you either give the money or you default and live with the consequences of it. You can't choose to spend less on it or something like that. Honourable McLaughlin, I think you're talking about the decline in the proportion of expenditure relative to state debt costs and whether that represents a reduction in debt. It doesn't. As you saw in the previous slides, we are building debt. As a percentage of spending the first quarter, there was a very small decline compared to previous years. In previous years, we've spent 9%, it's come down to 8%. I wouldn't treat it as a secular decline at all. In fact, over the year, given the size of our deficits, given what's taking place with interest costs and with the exchange rate, it's very likely that debt will continue to increase as a percentage of our expenditure. Then there was a question on how much we spend on maintenance. I just checked the E&E. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like we published that number. It is something you would have to request from us, and we'd have to get into our respective databases and try and come up with something that meets the request. The SASA saving, I think, was Twalaza. Excuse me, I'm going to say it because my mouth is dry. Twalaza. It was because my mouth was dry. that is a saving. That is people who were registered and receiving social grants that were not entitled to do so. So then, you know, there might be a very small percentage of people who were registered didn't re-register and they are entitled to receive it. But that's a field, that percentage is very, very small indeed. Mainly what this is about is a saving in terms of making sure that we give these grants to people who deserve, who qualify for them. The issue of skills and higher education key here is obviously a very important issue for government as a whole. If you look at the election manifestos of the parties involved, if you look at the ATSF, higher education does come up very strongly indeed. Let me just say that we need to interrogate this idea that graduates of our universities and even our further education training colleges are graduating without the requisite skills. There's interesting analysis or an interesting report on this by Sebastian van der Berg that shows that unemployment rates in higher education graduates are under 6%. And that would compare with unemployment rates for young people of close to 35%. So it does appear that if you are a young person and you get a university or a further education and training qualification, if you graduate from the system, your chances of finding work are actually very high. Now, I don't know whether they're graduating with the right skills or whether this is just a signal to the workplace that the risks associated with hiring a person are less. So I don't know whether the skills are suitable or not, but it does show that there is success within that system. What concerns us as Treasury, and certainly something we're talking to the Portfolio Committee about, is a lot of government policy at this stage focuses on access. So ensuring that as many young people as possible can access higher education training opportunities, which is obviously a very important thing. But as I said earlier, the problem is the pipe is big with people coming in and small with people going out. To me, as well as making the entry bigger, you need to increase the success rate of people leaving the system. And to me, that is the focus in terms of our engagements with departments, how we're going to address with the Department of Higher Education, how we're going to address the access and the quality issue rather than just the access issue. And if you look at the MTSF for Higher Education and Training, you'll see a number of the indicators identified are just about access, and we would prefer to see something that also recognizes the importance of success. Forward cover for appreciation is something that we talk about from time to time. It tends to be relatively expensive, and certainly in the 4 or 5 years leading up to 2010 when the rand was appreciating, you would be saying to me, why are you doing this forward cover? It's so expensive. So it's, you know, swings and roundabouts. We would like to see a little bit more opportunity with the Reserve Bank to do that. Directly with them rather than doing it through an intermediary, and we have had discussions about this, but it is a complex thing, and it's complex in terms of the relationship, the legal relationship between the Treasury and the Reserve Bank. It's something we think about, and certainly for the time being it appears to be something of a problem. But if really speaking in 2006, I would have been saying there were savings from DERCO because the cost of whatever they were doing was coming down because of the strengthening of the exchange rate. The e-natus thing is a problem, it's an issue. As I mentioned, we have an expectation that revenue earned from the RTMC will be transferred to the department to pay for this. The legislation that dictates that is wonky a parliamentary term. Chair, can I use that phrase? Is that all right? Is a little wonky. It's not terribly clear that is exactly what must happen. Road Traffic Management Corporation. That's the agency that earns money that we expect should be paying for the e-natives. Maintenance and operations. The RTMC sees it differently. They believe that they don't have to transfer that money to us. So we are engaged with lawyers and we have the two ministers of transport and finance meeting to resolve the issue. If they can resolve it so that the RTMC does transfer this money to the National Department of Transport, we won't see this matter again. If they can't resolve it, then you will see it again, I'm afraid. My understanding of the distribution of the higher education and training block grants is that it takes place over the course of the year. I don't know, I could be corrected on this, but we very seldom just give people money up front. We tend to pace it as a monthly transfer, sometimes a quarterly, but very seldom do we just give them, especially when we have limited authority over how that money is used. And certainly the universities are, it's important that they are semi-autonomous agencies of government, and that needs to be maintained. I've got a question here. Will the 1.1 persist? And I can't for the life of me remember what the 1.1 was. The same for goods and services. Our expectation is that it will persist, that it will realize, and perhaps even a little bit more. There are one or two departments where S&T, accommodation, entertainment, advertising, marketing budgets are running a little strong. Department of Energy, for example, their S&T and transfer and accommodation and transport budgets are pretty strong, and you will see analysis of that in the quarterly report, or headline analysis of that in the quarterly report. But I think that this does indicate that the savings initiatives that have been announced in February have taken hold. We have also seen declines in last year in a number of those items. I think good, but at the same time, goods and services budgets are under pressure. You know, this is also heavy for the police force. And the cost of petrol has gone up more than the cost of inflation. And so, you know, you don't want to squeeze the goods and services budget too hard. It's ARVs and medicine for hospitals, it's textbooks for schools and things like that, as well as the opulence of the civil service. Interesting question about the proportion of admin spending within those departments. If you look at the departments that are referenced there, Honorable McLaughlin, they tend to be quite small departments. Now, governance requirements mean that if you have a department, no matter how big it is, you need to have a corporate services unit, you need to have internal audit function, you need to have, there are a number of administration burdens that come with having a department. And there's an interesting question about whether there is a different modality, a more cost-effective modality for advocating and championing and delivering services in these sectors that doesn't involve having separate departments. So you can imagine in a large department like the Treasury, we can have a small administration unit that services everybody. If you halve the size of the department, you can't necessarily halve the size of the administration units. You can maybe reduce it by only a third. So I think that is the problem there. Chair, I think I've managed to cover everything, but I'm happy to take if I have it. Or, yeah.
Lani once says something about transfers. The thing you're whispering to me. It might be useful just to make that comment. We'll see what we do about it.
No, it's only the end of the session. Yeah, you put me out of guard now.
That's the bank broke. Let's take another round. Just once again to say to members, in fact I wanted to ask this question earlier, right? And check what may fear to say about it. The expenditure on the first quarter of this budget, do you think that the elections may have an impact on this. I'm just thinking we're not dealing with a normal year. Although one can say, well, when politicians are going campaigning, the administration must work nevertheless. But it may be that it may have had an impact, but you can comment later on it. Let me take another one. I'll start with Honorable Sheikh Imam, who was not here earlier, and followed by Honorable Magopa, Honorable Manu Irezi, Honorable Manara, Dr. Sitone, and then we can always come back other members who want to come in. Let's start.
Thank you, Honorable Sheikh, because the apology that was at the SCOBA briefing very quickly before I came. One of my questions is with regards to ISC, the growth of 6.4% in the compensation of employees. I thought there was an understanding that we were going to try and maintain the original level, well, not necessarily reduce it, but it would look like that now there's a 6.4% increase. That seems to be quite a serious concern for me. The second thing is there a possibility that we could get a breakdown in terms of maintenance of all the relevant departments, whether it's health, whether it's transport, whether it's human settlements and things. Finally, my concern is, like I think the other colleagues have got, that when would hold funding as a result of not spending or underspending, and one says the service delivery does suffer. I'm not sure whether this is really your domain to actually answer that. But my concern is this, is once we continue saying that it's not good to withhold, not good to withhold. You've also said almost 6 billion rand has already been spent in trying to capacitate people on the ground, and that does not seem to help either. Now the question is it not an indictment on COPCA itself that maybe the system of employing and the people that we are actually employing at a local level to perform these functions? Is there not a weakness there because you seem to have done everything, or we seem to be doing everything to try and rectify the things up? But if we continue also using the excuse that, you know, it's not good to withhold because services are less services must not cover, it's going to just continue again and again and again unless we find the real cause of it and rectify it. Thank you.
Thank you,
Honorable Chair. Is that a question on the pressure, national pressure? You know, before government was having a 1 year that you have to plan and implement. And then at the later stage they came up with the MTEF, Media Service Framework, to say that you plan for 3 years, you are given 3 years. So you can have a preparation stage, a planning stage, and implementation stage. I want to check, does the national treasurer request the business plan or implementation plan from the department before giving them money? Because I'm worried about the delay of expenditure because of delays. Whereas now we have 3 years to plan. You can plan it, you see that you can't implement in the second year, you can implement in the third year. So that the time you say it's an implementation time, you know exactly you are going to spend that money because you are given time, unlike before, when it was 1 year, you plan, you implement, you know, same time. It was like chaos. But continuously, the departments are not spending money because now they are delayed in the implementation and so on. I don't know that the problem of planning or what, but what is the national treasury doing about it? Do you request implementation plan on time and see that when you give money, actually this money is going to be spent, because the failure of spending money impacts negatively on the service delivery. And this is our concern in particular as politicians, to say that if the departments are not spending money, the problem is that it affects communities on the ground.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Firstly, let me raise my concern with regards to the health revitalization capital project. This problem is very serious and it's been long having this problem, as far back as 2002. That is why our hospitals are in this stage. Every year, the money is being budgeted for, but the money is not spent. I think as of now, we're supposed to dig in what is the problem. Our hospitals are falling apart. If you can go to Bumala, it's there. But every year, the money is being budgeted for, and it's held again. The seventh issue is in regards to basic education. We are seeing our kids under the mat. And the plans are there every year. But at the end of the day, the money is taken back. I would suggest, Chair, that we need to really have a very serious discussion with this. Departments that are failing to implement their programs. But Jefferson, can I find out from the treasurer? What is the progress with regards to your job fund? Have you created jobs as of now? Volunteering in it? Thank you very much.
Honorable Secretary.
Thank you, Chair. The public entities. I want to know if those people account. That is one. And two, I would like to know, you are an economist, maybe. You will understand me. I'm just a student. In the lecture that we had, they spoke about rents, and the lecturer asked, are the rents free? So I would like to ask you that question. In connection with public entities. The other one is the money that is going for the judges, myself and my friend here, and other people. Can we have a breakdown of that? Because you may find that the DA is getting a lot of money more than.
Okay,
thank you, Honourable Chair. Mr. Simmons, I just like your comment. If I look at the graphs, the overall picture that's presented here, I get the impression that, if I can refer specifically to the graph that appears on page 11 and 12, where we have this increase in our spending on cost of employees and other expenses are dropping. It looks as though if we carry on this trend, we're going to end up only spending money on compensating employees and having nothing left for anything else. And in that process, we're also going to look at ourselves a bit. Have we got some kind of strategy in mind to turn us around? Because this is a scary trend. It's spiraling downward all the way. I don't see any turnaround in the short term, certainly, but even in the long term, if we continue on this basis, we're going to end up in serious trouble. I was concerned when the LFC said they didn't see that the debt problem was much of a problem. I disagree with them entirely. I think it's a huge problem. And I was a little concerned when you initially said on that graph on slide 7 that you didn't think this was too serious, because within the next quarter, you're going to get a much greater degree of revenue coming in, because that's where property tax comes in. Well, I learned to my benefit in the war, to my regret in the past, that spending money that you don't yet have can be a very tricky business, because expectations aren't always met. And I'd just like to comment on that. Thank you.
Okay. Responses?
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Imam. No, sorry, the first question was from the Chair. Chair,
I can't see any evidence that elections have impact on spending trends. It is possible, you know, because the appropriation bill was only passed a couple of weeks ago, and so there's a different arrangement for governing how much departments spend, it is possible that it's impacted slightly on government department cash flows, but the cash flow seems to be being more or less in line. What might happen, there might be departments that have paid a lot of money because they needed to, and are going to have to justify why they did, even though the appropriation bill hadn't been passed. But that's more of an administrative thing. The other area that does concern me a little bit, which is related to the new government, is the macro reorganization of the state. When you introduce a new department, our experience in the past had been that it takes a while for the new departments to develop the capacity to spend their money on their programs effectively. So, for example, the departments of women, children, and people with disabilities, in their first year, they hardly spent any money at all, and what money they did spend, they spent on a trip overseas. But over the course of 2 or 3 years, they invested significantly in that governance capacity and now are a relatively well-administered department. So I'm concerned that there might be some weaknesses around some of the changes that we've made in terms of, and it might be worthwhile having a chat to some of those portfolio committees or maybe even the new departments themselves about what measures are in place to ensure that service delivery continues within their space while they establish themselves. Mr. Mum? The growth in compensation of employees is an outcome of the number of people you employ and the increase in the salaries that you pay them. Now, there's a public sector wage agreement that covers almost all employees at this level of government, and that says that employees are entitled to an inflation plus one increase. So inflation was 5.5%, plus one gives you 6.5%. That's how you get the 6.5% growth in compensation of employees' budgets. It implies very limited increase in employment, if any at all. The only way you could keep compensation budgets flat, zero growth, with the wage agreement like that, would be to have a significant reduction in numbers. And we haven't, no one has instructed us that we need to engage in a significant employer-led retrenchment program for government. But certainly, there are many countries in the world that financially, once their fiscus has collapsed, that is the most important thing that they have to do in order to re-establish their financial credibility. Maintenance spending, again, is something that we would have to pull out of the spending databases. I'm sure it wouldn't be too difficult, but if you could, you know, request that information from us, I'm sure we could put someone to work at providing you with the tables according to how you would like them to be laid out. The issue of capacity at local government, I'm obviously not going to comment on whether there are weaknesses within POCSA, but certainly there are very significant weaknesses in implementation capacity. It appears as if some of those weaknesses are systemic, and so it's not necessarily a case of just replacing the people involved. It's a case of reforming the institutions that govern that expenditure. Perhaps one of your researchers, if they have a little time, would do a search for Chile capital. Actually, I will send a presentation to the researchers that looks at the system of capital planning in Chile. And I usually don't like supporting people on international trips, but if you ever went to visit the Department of Planning in Chile, I would say that would probably be money well spent, because that is a country which very carefully regulates the planning cycle for capital. And it links to Honourable McLaughlin's point about business plans. It has very, very strict and strong requirements, as well as very good government support to departments meeting those requirements
around the building of capital. It's taken them 30 years to get there, so you know, you couldn't do what they've done here, but maybe we should be thinking about starting to do it. So you know, that's an issue. So I think I've dealt mainly with Honorable Mitlope's point to say that there is something to be said for much for requirements for better business plans. Certainly where it's relevant, we do ask departments and we evaluate those business plans. The budget guidelines we publish on the internet do include a section on capital budgeting, and certainly if this committee has any views on those guidelines, how they could be improved, we'd be very happy to engage with the committee on that. Honourable Manana, I'm going to take your comments on health and basic education as comments. I agree with you completely. It's an area of grave disappointment that we've been unable to get this right, and the cost is a human cost that will persist for the children and those people's lives. They will never recover from it. So certainly, speaking to the portfolio committees about how they are working with the department to address this would be a great first position, but also if necessary, you certainly have the authority to call them here and interrogate them yourselves. Honourable Shoppe Sitole, the public entities have accounting offices. They account directly to the departments, and the departments account to you in terms of those entities. But you know, there are opportunities, I'm sure, for you to request certain entities to report or present you directly. I'm not entirely sure what you meant when you asked, are rents free? Because as an economist, you'll know that they never are free. They are extremely costly, and very seldom buy you what you intended to buy. As government, we create rents formally. So where we choose to procure things locally at a slightly higher price than if we procured them from China, that would be a formal rent. And when we do that, you would expect that we've assessed whether the benefits of the local production outweigh the additional cost. And that's part of the discussions that you would have in these and the portfolio committees. But you're absolutely right. There are, throughout government, but also within the public entity space, a number of informal rents, very costly and expensive rents, and our line of sight into those things from the Treasury, but proposed from government as a whole, is limited. But agencies like the Auditor General, the Accountant General, and increasingly the Chief Procurement Officer have emergent and often very good capacity in order to do so. We could certainly, if you request a breakdown of the direct charges, if you can just give us some sense of how you would like those to be broken down, or perhaps what it is that you want to see, and we can then give you the breakdown we think that would serve you the best. And then Honourable McLaughlin, you know, the very important point, the point about the growth in compensation budgets compared to the rest. Compensation budgets are a little bit of a direct charge. We have very limited discretion over them. You can either pay people the salaries or you can find it. Now, there is a wage agreement that is going to be negotiated. DPSA is preparing for that wage agreement. Certainly, the evidence from the first quarter reports is that most departments, especially the large employing departments, compensation budgets are very tight. There's very little fat to absorb a higher than inflation increase. And so, you know, thinking about the structure of government spending and how we balance spending between those items, getting that right, is certainly a very, in my opinion, a very important topic for this committee. As a percentage of non-interest spending, compensation has gone up from 36% to 40%. You can only have 100% of spending. So that means 4% is less is spent on something else. And there are questions about what we get in return for higher than inflation salary adjustments. Debt dynamics, you know, the level of debt is one thing. And certainly our level of debt has increased significantly in the last 5 years. And that is something we're very uncomfortable with. We do believe it was necessary and important in terms of a counter-cyclical response to the economic downturn, but it has these costs. It's not all gravy. You have to pay up with some vegetables at some stage. So our debt is now at a level which we believe is still sustainable, still appropriate, but it is considerably higher than where it was. What is probably more concerning to us is the trend in that debt. If you look at a graph of our debt level compared to our peer countries we're compared with, you will see that 5 or 6 years ago our debt was considerably below the peer group, then went up and then stabilized and started declining. Ours went up, overtook them. It's stabilizing, but it's still increasing. And the fact that our debt continues to increase, to me, is more significant than the level. The level of our debt is still relatively low, but the fact that our economy hasn't responded to allow us to stabilize the debt, that is a real concern. And the problem, perhaps it's more appropriate in the finance committee, is, have we committed to spend more than we can afford? And how are we going to address that? Chair, I think that's everything on that ground.
I've just
noticed a colleague of mine is joining me. Corner there is Owen Wilcox. Owen has been at Treasury for a while. He's worked specifically around industrial policy and macroeconomic modeling. He's currently the acting chief director for the economic services unit in public finance, looking after DTI, rural development and land reform, agriculture, science and technology, and probably a few I've got.
Yeah, okay. How much money
did
you get? 45%.
Oh, when you
want to stay in? No.
Not that.
I was discussing
the good day. Okay. All right, let's go back to honorable members. Honorable Shortest Stewart.
No, I just wanted to chair to ask that
Honorable Malanda said she's not answered. You didn't say anything about the jobs fund.
Oh, you're right. No, excuse me.
That's because I don't have very much to say. But I perhaps should have told you that. Honorable Malanda, the jobs fund in its early years did have implementation challenges. We were implementing it in partnership with the DBSA, the Development Bank of South Africa, and we learned a lot about the capacity of government agencies. What they tell you is their capacity compared to what actually is their capacity. We have brought the jobs fund more under the Treasury stable, and that seems to have assisted it a lot, and it's now performing very well. If you would like a briefing on its performance, We have a number of reports on it, and we could send you something or send the committee something more with a lot more detail than what I have available for you. But certainly it is evolving as an important intervention, and both in terms of the mix of projects that it's financing, but also the cost per job. The cost per job, which appears sustainable at this point, is actually is a lot lower than we expected.
Go back to another short question.
Thanks, Chairperson. I was actually quite excited when they introduced the new visitor. I understand he knows a lot about DTI. I would like to know what he's doing as treasurer to assist DTI to industrialize so that we can maybe promote the growth of the economy, because we all worried here about the lack of growth. Thanks.
Okay, let's note down. Okay. You'll get a chance to respond on the receipt.
I'm probably going to talk about this honorable chairperson if I'm here for the next 5 years. And yeah, we hear people trying to console us and tell us that it is a problem, and apologies for the people. But this, I would like an explanation on this, that the debt is sustainable. I just would like an explanation on what, I know what that means, but what makes it sustainable?
Was there somebody else deciding? Okay, honorable.
Thank you, honorable chair. Let me just add on to that. I think the question that I'd like to ask is it wise for us to continue increasing our debt level, number one? Number two, is that option, or do you think that maybe we are moving, our expectations are too high as a result of that? We want to deliver more than our capacity at this point in time, and as such we are increasing the debt level. Do you think that maybe we should slow down? Given the fact that I think what, about 142 billion is still what it costs us to service the debt, taking that into consideration together with the fact that a lot of entities are understanding and monies are being returned. So the question is, should we be going in that direction? Or do you think we should slow down a bit? Because when you create expectations, if you're expecting to give the people 100 houses, they're going to want 200 houses. So should we not try and have a certain standard, a certain level, so that we could keep it in line with trying to restrict our debt, but at the same time, of course, maintain the delivery and address all the other challenges we have? Thanks.
Okay. Let me also add a question with respect to the delivery department, those that are involved with the infrastructure, etc. Which ones must we watch from your side, especially? In other words, where are the red flags? Because as we go into the second term, will end soon. Will be the second quarter will end of September. So we'd want to see by that time what is the story. Because come October, the minister starts finalizing the MTPPS, which essentially is the mini budget. So it's a reallocation again. And if we're not careful, we might reallocate more money to departments that have no capacity to spend. So if we can check the red flags early, the better. But you have mentioned one or two looking at the expenditure of last year, but are there any other big delivery departments we should be worried about?
Okay, let me start with your question, and then I can move to the debt question. And Owen, I'm looking forward to hearing. Just keep in mind, Owen, you're not the DG or PTI, so. All right. Chair, so we've mentioned the indirect grants at basic education and health. Beyond that, the infrastructure spending by national government departments is in police and in justice. Both of those departments, they have good years and bad years. And one of the problems there is Public Works, because Public Works is their partner in terms of delivering and maintaining new ports and new police stations. And there are some concerns about that in the first quarter. It'll be interesting to see whether those trends recover in the second quarter. But I think if you're particularly interested in infrastructure at the national level, it's those two indirect grants and the capital spending of justice and police. Beyond that, I think that the vacancy levels within national departments is an important issue. Certain national departments have funded establishments that are higher than the number of people they've got. We're looking at this very closely in terms of the budget,
to reprioritize, perhaps even save some money, but that can be a very difficult thing to do to departments. A little bit like withholding funds, just because they have employed someone doesn't mean they don't need someone. Very often they're just not able to find the right person. But we are in an environment of significant fiscal tightness, and we need to look at all options. Sustainability of debt levels is a great topic.
Just before that, we shouldn't be worried about human settlements or process. Those two are fine. No red flags. You can come back to it later if you haven't checked it. But I'm interested in departments that have huge budgets that impact on service delivery, infrastructure, and I think we just need to see what's happening there. But if you don't have the data now, we can ask our researchers to check that.
I had to make work for myself, but perhaps when you invite the minister to come make his presentation again for the second quarter, you can include that you should have a particular focus on conditional grants, because a lot of the infrastructure that is financed by national government is spent by provinces or local governments. So you might not see, what you would see in this report is the extent to which that money has been transferred to provinces and local government. You wouldn't see the extent to which actually procured capital goods on behalf of government. Okay. Debt dynamics, Honourable Pick, is a fascinating topic. Many very important and interesting factors. The most important is growth. We earn revenue for government by taxing economic activity. If this economy was growing at 3-3.5%, we would probably have a different path in terms of our debt path. So the question is, what do we believe this economy can grow by over a long period of time? Now, in 2008-2009, we had built up quite good savings as government. We had debt levels of 22.5% of GDP, and the economy had grown by 4.5% for a couple of years. We then hit something of a crisis. Now, in response to a crisis, if it's everything, what you normally do is you borrow money to get you across that trough. So it's a little bit in your personal, not yours, let me use mine, not to jinx anybody. If I had an illness, a sudden illness that was to make me blind for 6 weeks, and the doctor was to say, if the doctor was to say, don't worry, you'll be fine in 6 weeks' time, it wouldn't make sense for me to sell my car, sell my house, significantly change my lifestyle so that I could afford the next 6 weeks and I'm not going to earn an income. Rather, I should borrow that money, I should live tight, but frugally, but not unnecessarily so, because after 6 weeks, I'm going to have my sight restored and I'm going to go back to work. So that's the downside of the trough. Problem is, after 6 weeks, my sight hasn't returned. Government, we've been forecasting a recovery in the economy. The economy hasn't recovered. Back to the doctor says, look, maybe it's 8 weeks. So I borrow a bit more because now it's only 2 weeks more. And that's what we did. We said, okay, we're not growing now, but next year we'll start to grow. After 8 weeks, my sight's still not returning. I go back to the doctor. He says, could be 10 weeks, but you know what? This could also be permanent. That is the state we're in. Is this a temporary slowdown of the economy? Or has our expectation for how fast this economy can grow, has it changed? Our assessment as Treasury is that while the potential growth rate has come down, it still is significantly higher than the rate at which we're growing spending. That, by default, is a sustainable position, because it means your income over the long term will grow faster than your expenditure. But it is very important that we keep a very tight rein on spending, which is a very difficult thing to do in a country like this, which has such large needs and deficits in the social economic sphere. So this is a very, very challenging time for us the next few years. I ran the fiscal policy unit where we made these decisions, or we were advised on these decisions, during the time when we ran a surplus and during the time when we ran a 6% deficit. And I can tell you, this time of recovery is the most difficult time because people need the money, they want the money. But it's important for you to first pay off the debt, to stabilize your debt in the past, and then to reevaluate where you are. You mustn't, as the economy recovers in the next few years, which Treasury hopes it will, we still need to, at least with all cost of all, we still need to keep a very tight control over spending in order to stabilize and begin paying down some levels of debt. And I think that's all quite well explained in Chapter 3 of the Budget Review, if you get a chance. To read it. Well, Imam, have I dealt with your concerns about debt with that comment?
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay.
But I can add one if you find the chair. Is there any chance we can go? We may end up going into a recession.
A recession is a technical term, which indicates. Owen, as would indicate, two quarters of negative growth. Okay?
Sort of.
And there is very, you see, Owen used to do economic forecasting for us.
Yeah.
There's very limited chance of us going into a recession in the near term. But more of a concern is this low-level equilibrium. It's a little bit like a frog in a pot. You've heard that analogy. You put a frog in a pot, the water's cold, and you just slowly heat up the water. The frog doesn't notice there's a problem until it's too late. So the low level of growth is just because we're not going into recession doesn't mean that things are okay. Good.
Can I comment on that question as well? I'll just comment on it very quickly. So in South Africa, what actually happens is we have the Reserve Bank decides when an official recession starts and ends. And what they do is the problem is they do it about 6 months after it's happened. So everyone already knows by the time they come with the official announcement. Because it takes 6 months, they use the rule of thumb, which is two quarters of negative growth. So I was actually trying to see now what the GDP announcement is. It's anticipated it's going to be positive, but not very, very strong. So we might avoid the two quarters of negative growth, but I think we are in a bit of a funk at the moment, and it's... I think we need to worry about that whether or not, I mean, levels of GDP growth are so low, I don't think we should be worrying about that, not only whether or not we're in a technical recession, official recession by the Reserve Bank standards. The question was, what are we doing to help in DDI and industrial policy? Well, firstly, we give them quite a large allocation. They get about 10 billion rand a year. They spend most of that on industrial incentives. They also spend quite a lot on incentives to broaden participation in the economy, but it's mostly on industrial incentives. And in addition to that, they also get we call it tax expenditures, so they tax relief on taxes, so that you don't pay your full tax amount, and we calculate that amount. It's about, the biggest one goes to the automotive industry. They get about 16 billion rand a year. So that's on import tariffs that they should pay to bring cars into South Africa, but under the automotive investment scheme, then they don't have to pay that if they are exporting. So the amount of money involved is quite large, as I said. So it's about 10 billion a year, and then if you include tax expenditures, it's probably another 18, 19 billion a year. I think as Treasury, we would agree with you that we need to be industrializing more. The economies that have grown most rapidly in just looking over history have all had very large industrial sectors, and they've really promoted manufacturing exports. So I think that we would agree with the strategy. The problem is at the moment we're not exactly sure what sort of impact our spending is having. Just because we need some much stronger mechanisms for monitoring and evaluation. The DTI has started putting that into place on some schemes. Treasury worked very closely with them on a scheme called the Manufacturing Competitiveness Enhancement Scheme, and that's got very strong monitoring included in it. So that was the first scheme where we've really put in a strong evaluation framework, and I think to say from the Treasury side, we're going to insist on that sort of rigorous evaluation in future for all sort of schemes if DK wants to roll out any new incentive scheme. So I think I think that's the spot, really. We've got to figure out how well we're doing now, and then the idea from my side, and I think also in the DTI has mentioned this in the medium-term strategic framework, is to make industrial policy more flexible and responsive. So looking at the schemes that are working, shift more funds into the other ones, and cut back on the ones that don't work. I think there's a lot of theory about it. And it, mostly the industrial policy that's been successful has been where government has been very actively involved, and but the policy has to be successful, has to be flexible. You try a whole lot of things, most of them don't work, and then you've got to be very strict about making sure something's not working. It doesn't matter if you like the guys, you know, you've got to make sure that you cut off any support to them, and then but the guys that are working, you've got to support them even more. So I think that's the start, and the vision going forward, hopefully, to get a more flexible industrial policy that hopefully will result in more manufactured exports. And if we get that, then we should begin much higher levels of growth and reduce poverty.
Okay, I will not exhaust it. We want more. Researchers, you want to say something?
Oh, yeah.
Before the normal shop store?
I just wanted to pose this question to the chair. When I'm going to Chile?
Okay. I don't know. Honorable six.
The DA doesn't support the international efforts.
we cut him on the expenditure. Okay. Sir, you're right. You want to say something? Okay.
Yeah, we must do something.
Thanks, Chair.
Chair raised earlier on the areas of infrastructure that would be of particular interest for the community. I suspect the area which I was looking at and concerned about its health, its education, its human settlement, its transport, and majorly for that probably some of the areas that one would be looking at would be in police, would be in justice as well. I think this serves to highlight the importance of cooperative governance, the importance of the crucial grant transfers in the system, of which a significant portion of that amount actually goes towards funding these infrastructure developments. So it sort of goes to emphasize what was the finding of the committee as well in the planning session that was held, that the work of the committee will have to involve a lot of collaboration with our committees, portfolio committees in particular, and with the National Council of Provinces, because the actual transfers on infrastructure stipulate conditions that provinces have to comply with, that municipalities have to comply with, and also that national department has to comply with, especially in terms of capacity support and ensuring that plans in place and the targets set out are attained by the receiving officers of these funds. So it's just something I'd like the committee to note. Secondly, Chair, on the information, Matthew did make up on earlier that this is his first presentation on test report in particular, and the format thereof, we can make comments on acceptability, credibility, and so on. Just a request through you, Chair. To receive PDF to analyze financial information is not always helpful, because we like to take this and consolidate it in 2 pages for honorable members and the chair, and it's not always easy when it's PDF only, because you have to transcribe all the numbers literally into another document. Just for the better to, okay, just help with that. And also, Medu did refer earlier to they'll be able to go look into the database and confirm. I think it was an issue with, I think, health. In the planning session, the committee is very okay, would like to come to the data to see where the database, where they actually see what was what's the risk area, what's the forecast. Another for a section 44, section 40 pro, section zone, all of the retina system is at the national treasury, and we do like to coordinate for themselves as well. So it's the community is interested in that. And thanks a lot for the presentation. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, we have agreed that we would like to visit the national treasury at some point, so we need to work around the date. The Honourable Chairperson.
Chairperson, I was just looking at all those departments, these are spending departments, and since we are responsible for the allocation of funds, I think we should include a GTI so that we follow up on their progress on industrialization, which creates the wealth, so that these ones can spend. We should also include small business and the Department of Economic Development, so that we look at the other side of the coin, because this is the spending side. Those ones are the wealth creators, and it is extremely necessary that we sit here knowing that something is done about economic growth.
Okay, better luck. Your time now.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mr. Matthew spoke about the need for the community to contribute towards improving interaction with the treasury. That's right. I want also to raise and concur with Sepo for the issue of the report. And say to Matthew, probably we will give him a proposal. We do have a proposal on our side that we run through the chair first and get his approval on it. We might assist this committee to extract more information and improve the report that we are getting. That's one. Two, one issue, Chair, that I wanted to draw attention on, around the issue of the stocking of funds for transfers by Treasury. Chair, we are aware that the Section 216 of the Constitution empowers the Treasury to set out measures on transparent and expenditure controls for the organs of state. However, Subsection 2 also empowers Treasury to try to stop those funds when those organs of state have not complied with those measures. What I want to highlight here also is that maybe Treasury will help us with the list of the issues that led to a decision of stopping those funds, so that the comment can be clear on what were the issues that led to the stopping of funds in the municipalities. Because in the last financial year also, it was the same issue. So we want also to have the consistency if those are the same municipalities that were with hedge funds in the last financial year and they have been assisting. So the second issue also on the same area is the question to why important treasury to also stop funds. But it says, National Treasury must enforce compliance with the measures established in terms of Subsection 1 and may stop funds. It doesn't say must stop funds. It says it may stop funds, meaning that it leaves the room for other measures and options to be taken into account to try and address the issue rather than using the stopping of funds as a solution. Yes. So what I wanted to find out probably is that probably maybe you can tell the committee what other measures have been taken before the stopping funds was taken as a last resort. Because for me, the way the provision reads suggests that the stopping of funds should be used as a last resort. Because the same thing must. So you can actually come up with other measures to try and address the issue before you stop the funding. Because you're also running away from the unintended consequences, especially taking into account the safety of the protest in the municipalities and also the lack of revenue base on some of these rural municipalities. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. I guess this is a matter that we are going to have to
deliberate on a lot, because I think as we were discussing earlier was this issue that even when treasury comes with indirect grants, and if you're saying it does not necessarily imply that at all times national departments themselves will have the requisite capacity. So it means we are going to have to look at the whole issue of the capacity of the state. Because at the end of the day, I think what you are saying that happens. If National Treasury intervenes, or say national departments go in and they take over, and they also can't do it, at the end, self-delivery suffers. Goods and services are not provided, infrastructure is not provided. At some point, we need to do something, because it means the issue of capacity is not only at local government levels. It can also be at national level, provincial level. So it's something that we really need to look at. If there are other measures, what are the measures? But at the end of the day, there must be capacity in the state. So there is no two ways about it. There has to be capacity, and capacity must be brought in. We need to train people, we need to ensure that these things are done. But it's something that obviously we can't exhaust now, but it's going to be one of the areas that we are going to look at. What is it that causes this? Whether it's local government or provincial, why can't people perform these tasks? Why can't they implement and be able to look into it? But maybe we'll respond later. There was a hand. You want to say something quickly? Then I'm going to go to Honorable Nevers.
Thanks a lot, Chairperson. Basically, I want to say we welcome the undertaking from the side of National Treasury to give us the second quarter, you know, with conditional grants, because it's been stressing that, and we are hoping that we'll get second quarter before the MCDPS, not after the MCDPS. And then the issue of Chile, we think that proposal, and we'll incorporate it in the study that we're doing for the committee.
Yeah, I've never been to Chile. Okay, maybe when you report later, just indicate what is possible in terms of getting the second quarter before the MTBPS. Because I don't know how fast you compile these reports at National Treasury level. Is the budget office here? You guys want to say something? You are fine. Brida, do you want to say something? You are fine. Okay. Remember, your responsibility is to advise the committee. I want you to advise the committee in action. It's okay to write a small note after the fact, but sometimes when there are engagements, it's important to come and say, this is the information we have. This is how we see things. Ghost, you are fine. Okay. He's a real ghost, this one. He lives in the dark. Honorable Mac, whether you want to come back in.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to comment. My little brother across the table pointed out 2162, which says that you may stop the transfer of funds from all the state, but it precedes that by saying that the National Treasury must enforce compliance with the measures established. Now, I imagine what the National Treasury does is it uses the stopping of funds in an attempt to enforce compliance, but it can't be the only way to do it, and I don't know whether there are any other measures in place that Treasury uses to enforce their compliance. I'd be interested to hear whether they are and what they are. Thank you.
I've been the same question that I was raising.
Just a quick one. This may not, the honourable members will recall when the first president was in the house, and he said the may and must mean the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not that's the company. Honourable members, any comments? You're fine. Honourable Banana, you are okay. To Chile. I think that Chile is getting more momentum.
Honorable Madropa Yosai, Honorable Nyalunga Yosai, Honorable Sid Yosai.
I support the
I think we now have 100% support. Honorable Mepluden, you are fine. Honorable Shorten. Yes.
Just support after the
team to
stop over in the Caribbean.
I'd love to stop in the Caribbean. Honorable Shorten, you are fine.
No, I'm fine, Chair, except that I would like the gentleman to seriously consider including IDG, economic development, national business, as economic creating departments, not just look at the spending.
Okay. All right, let's come back to Matthew. To respond. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think that if you have to respond, one of the things that when discussed the format with our team to look at non-financial information, and I think DPME will be a useful institution to engage. It will help us a lot to see how departments are performing and be able to project and see where the red flags are going forward. Okay. Thank you, Chair. And I think let me start on that. The issue of non-financial information is one of access to data. There's a tension between requiring government departments to account and overburdening them to the extent that they it begins to undermine their own operations and ability to perform their own business. The reporting environment of government is already very complex and quite burdensome. It is something that we should probably have a look at some stage in some detail. We can have a chat to DPME about how they can contribute to our presentation, but I'm sure that you know that you can also request them to present to the committee. I certainly would like to, as much as possible, include performance information, but unfortunately, the highest frequency information we have available to us is literally just the financial information. But perhaps in some of the interactions or presentations, we could include observations or things like that. The area of conditional grants, as well as those departments identified, they are important for the purposes of the committee because the committee has identified issues in terms of underspending within that. So, Honourable Shofitole, what I would like to understand is what is it that you would like to see from us in terms of presenting to the committee on DTI, small business, the IDT. We can maybe have a chat afterwards, or you can give some thoughts and communicate with us through GOES perhaps, because certainly we would like to try and meet your expectations in terms of that. Fortunately, I'm not involved in the stopping funds at all. I can't tell you what the framework is for it, what the requirements are of it, what kind of alternative measures have been directly considered. I think that those issues would be put to our Intergovernmental Relations Unit, and I've got no doubt that they would appreciate the opportunity to come and explain to you on what basis they make those decisions and what alternatives they tend to employ in order to do so. But I think the discomfort of the committee is shared by us. Stopping of funds is not a solution at all. It's a solution to financial mismanagement or lack of transparency or lack of utilization. It doesn't help with the answer problem of delivering services. So it's not something we enter into lightly at all. I understand exactly what the researchers say when they say receiving PDFs is not terribly useful. Let's have a chat about putting together a workbook of tables from the report that will allow you guys
generate your own reports as well as do whatever analysis you want to do. No problem with that at all. It probably is very untransparent of us to PDF everything. I will communicate with Ghost about some reports on what Chile is doing. It might mean you don't have to go to Chile, but that is up to the chair of the committee. I have no idea when you will receive the second quarter report, but I will communicate to the team that does that your request. If any issues with it, we'll let you know. Thank you, Chair. And Chair, finally, just if that's the end, just to thank you and the committee. I've enjoyed the engagements, and the issues have been very interesting, important ones. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Let's thank Matthew for having come all the way from Victoria. Not where you came from. Yeah, I don't know. I met him in the lunch this morning and was very happy that you think he's not going to be late because I'm in the same thing. No, thank you very much, Matthew, and you'll be in touch with our team so that we can improve for the next engagement. Obviously, the important story might really come up with the second court. And I think for us as the committee, we'll have to watch this. We will be engaging with some of the departments. We've got that on a program. But by the second quarter, we will have to really look at the data very, very closely. Because if the departments by the second quarter will still be under 30% of expenditure, we are going to be very concerned, especially the delivery ones. But also as we engage with departments, because sometimes departments will tell you, no, but all this is committed. The question is whether it's going to be sent. And sometimes that's where the trick is. Because people say, no, it's committed. We start low, but we're still warming up. We are coming. Don't worry. But I think it's important that we will raise the very serious questions when we engage with the department beyond the second quarter. Because come the MTBPS, the reallocation starts. And I'm worried that we might continue to send money where it shouldn't be going. But I think we've done well for today. We've done well for today. Let's thank all the honorable members, our team. Just before we conclude, Darren, any announcements? Tomorrow we meet you what time? 10 o'clock. Just remind members.
Tomorrow morning we'll be meeting just as the committee where the content advisor will present on the planning document in committee room S26 and not V457 as indicated. I will send a reminder out to members. Yeah, in the NCOP building.
NCOP side. Okay, honorable members, thank you very much. We will see you tomorrow at F26:10 so we can discuss our threat plan and look at our program and finalize some of the departments we want to engage with. Thank you very much. Samantha Cotto.